You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
Just 2 days ago, the government announced a complete overhaul of the Resource Management Act. The RMA as it is would be dismantled and then split into two separate acts, a Planning Act regulating the use and development of land, and a Natural Environment Act focusing on the use and protection of land, air, water, and other natural resources. Minister responsible for RMA reform, Chris Bishop, and Undersecretary Simon Court said that the reforms were intended to streamline development more efficiently while also protecting the environment. The week before this, the Greens issued a call for the compassionate release of 77-year-old inmate Dean Wycliffe, who is currently on a hunger strike at the Spring Hill Corrections Facility after being arrested for being made houseless in violation of his probation conditions. And Green Party co-leader Chloe Swarbrick made a renewed call to the government, calling on them to support a members' bill of theirs that would sanction Israel for their occupation of the Palestinian territories. For our weekly catch-up, I spoke to the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March for the party's take on all of these issues. Just 2 days ago, the government announced a complete overhaul of the Resource Management Act. The RMA as it is would be dismantled and then split into two acts, a Planning Act regulating the use and development of land and a Natural Environment Act focusing on the use and protection of land, air, water, and other natural resources. Minister responsible for RMA reform, Chris Bishop, and Undersecretary Simon Court said that the reforms were intended to streamline development more efficiently while also protecting the environment. So to begin, what is the Green Party's opinion on the government's overhaul of the Resource Management Act?
Well, it's an announcement about an announcement, right? We don't have the details of it yet, but there's the government's track record on, for example, environmental protections and other decisions in relationship to infrastructure leaves us with little trust that actually these changes will actually put the well-being of our environment and actually the importance of making good decisions in relationship to, for example, high-density housing, having good quality transport infrastructure as a priority. So we're just simply needing the government to actually front up with the details and commitments to protecting our environment and actually future-proofing our infrastructure.
Was the previous Resource Management Act holding back housing and infrastructure development, as Chris Bishop has suggested?
Yeah, but there's a difference between what Chris Bishop is saying and what the government is doing. If the government is so concerned about laws holding back housing being built in our communities, for example, he would have not cancelled hundreds of homes being built by Kāinga Ora that would have actually delivered homes for low-income communities and would have lowered rents across neighbourhoods. And so I think Chris Bishop is straight up spinning this around, claiming that it's the RMA that's stopping houses from being built, when actually it's his government's own decisions that have cancelled housing projects across the country.
What impacts will reducing resource consents and introducing more standardized land use zones have on protecting the environment?
Well, so what we need to see is the proper detail of what that looks like. But I mean, if we're to read on the National Party's track record, the risks here is that it could create sprawling neighborhoods of low density housing that actually would end up using a lot of land when we could be building medium to high density housing in our cities while protecting the environment better. We know that building medium to high density public housing is better for outcomes for middle to low income earners, as well as better use of land and the environment. But the National Party has a track record of supporting sprawling neighborhoods by private developers that only lead to an increase in housing prices.
Additionally, what's your opinion on the lack of a treaty principles clause in the new RMA reform legislation?
It's completely on brand with the government's lack of care for Te Tiriti o Waitangi, and it's just once again a complete slap in the face to our commitments as the Crown to honouring our foundational document. It just shows that the government has no respect for Māori, and or the document that actually allows also non-Māori to be here in this country.
Chris Bishop has also said that he'll be reaching out to Labour and the Greens to find common ground on the new legislation. Do you think it's possible for the Greens and the government to see eye to eye on the RMA reforms?
I mean, look, if the government was genuinely interested in having a sensible conversation on protecting our environment, building good quality public housing in our neighbourhoods, We'd be sitting around the table. But the reality is this is all spin from Chris Bishop. He's actually not really interested in forming consensus. What he's interested is in simply convincing us to do what he wants to do. He's not actually interested in negotiating for better outcomes. And so I'm just going to call that out for what it is, and that is just spin and optics coming from someone who has a track record of doing exactly just that.
All right, moving on to the next topic. The Greens recently issued a call for the compassionate release of 77-year-old inmate Dean Wycliffe, who is currently on a hunger strike at the Spring Hill Corrections Facility. Dean was arrested on the 5th of March for breaching parole by living in his car after he was made houseless, and he began his hunger strike as a call for him to be released from prison immediately and without any parole conditions. My next question is, why are the Greens backing Dean Wycliffe's calls for release?
Yeah, what Dean has experienced at the hands of our carceral system is indicative of a broader problem, which is the lack of upholding basic humane treatment for people in our prisons and corrections facilities. And so he has experienced violence within those corrections facilities. And there has been reports that have already recommended corrections to actually set a minimum standard of humane treatment. That has not been followed. And so I think it's really important that we do not conflate the need for justice in Aotearoa in general, and to have a justice system, with the reality that the carceral system does not work to rehabilitate people. And all it does is actually perpetuate a cycle of violence. And I think Dean's situation exemplifies this.
Do you think that there are many other houseless people in Aotearoa who've been arrested on technicalities similar to Wycliffe's?
Homeless people are actually some of the more likely to experience violence and targeting by the police. This is why we need to actually overhaul our carceral and police system so that we actually have a genuine justice system that delivers outcomes to our communities rather than seeing people living in their cars being targeted. It's not people's fault that we have a housing crisis that is a government issue and government decision, and therefore people who are houseless should not be targeted by our police system.
Given Wycliffe's criminal history, would it be sensible for him to be released to the public?
Well, our justice system needs, if he had a sentence that actually had an end, that needs to be respected. I think to me the challenge is that the system is not created to genuinely rehabilitate people. And what we've got to remember is that he is being targeted for being houseless. That should not be happening regardless of someone's past.
Additionally, taking his living conditions outside prison into account, is it even safe for him to be re-released, given that he'll most likely end up houseless again?
But this is why we need to actually overhaul the support system that exists, so that when people get out of prison, actually they're not being thrown into the streets, which in many cases actually only criminalizes them further. For example, we have this thing called the Steps to Freedom Grant, which is supposed to offer a small amount of income support for people to get their lives back on track. That has not been updated in a very, very, very long time. So I actually used to work with many formerly incarcerated people at the front lines before becoming an MP, and I would see this happening on a daily basis, people being released out of prison, only for them to find themselves homeless again.
All right, moving on to the last topic. Last week, Green Party co-leader Chloe Swarbrick made a renewed call to the government to support a members bill of hers that would sanction Israel for their occupation of the Palestinian territories. The calls were renewed after Israel restarted a bombing campaign and ground offensive that has killed more than 400 Palestinians as of today, breaking the permanent ceasefire that had been previously achieved in January. Are you confident that the Greens will get the support they need from executive MPs to bypass the bill?
We're fighting tooth and nail alongside the community to put pressure on government MPs to show an ounce of conscience and support this bill. Government MPs have a choice to make as to whether they will stand on the right side of history and oppose a genocide that is happening, and by opposing it, actually hold Israel to account for its actions or stand idly by. I think it is time that actually all of us MPs reflect on whether it is good enough to simply be making statements in international forums, or whether we have an opportunity here to actually follow recommendations by international bodies that have highlighted the need for Israel to face sanctions.
Do you think that the renewed bombing campaign in Gaza will prompt the government to take a stronger stance on Israel's occupation of the Palestinian territories?
Well, this is the thing. I think the government should. And And what this bombing campaign shows is that Israel is hell-bent on continuing this genocide, to continue the massacre of killing people in Gaza and actually many, many children along the way. What I think this government MPs have an opportunity to do is to use their conscience to support this member bill to actually have consequences on Israel for the genocide and ethnic cleansing that they are committing.
And will the bill be updated to take into account the recent events in Gaza as well?
Well, what the bill creates is a sanctions regime, and so that will allow us to do similar things to what we have done with Russia. And so I think how that sanction regime is used then can be designed by the government. But we will absolutely always be keeping a watchful eye onto the actions of Israel to ensure that our members bill and actually any policy calls that we are making reflects the most recent events.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.